fundamentally un-American. Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our technical producer is Steve Nolan. And our guest for this evening is David Borden, the executive director of DRCnet.org, the Drug Reform Coordination Network. We'll bring him on here in just a few minutes, but in honor of Halloween, I wanted to give you this special little spooky treat.
Told me a few years ago that we would ever read headlines like these in American newspapers, I would have called him crazy. Yet here we are, reading them. In the middle of the 20th century in the United States of America, hundreds and hundreds of teenage boys and girls are becoming hopeless dope addicts every year. It's fantastic, it's unbelievable, and it's terrible, but it's true. The government maintains two hospitals just to treat drug addicts. It used to be a rare thing for a juvenile to be admitted, but look at these recent figures. And remember, these are only confirmed addicts who have come to the attention of federal authorities. How many others are still only occasional users of marijuana or heroin, morphine, or in some cases sleeping pills? It's pretty hard to estimate. But there's one sure thing. Nobody is going to stay an occasional user very long. This is one game nobody beats. If you use narcotics, before long you'll have the habit, about the hardest in the world to break. And the dope addicts say, you're hooked.
Oh, yes, we've done quite well with this war on drugs, 88 years or so. And they mentioned two hospitals back in the 50s. Well, of course, now there's more than 2,000, and hundreds of thousands of kids use drugs. And why? It's because of prohibition. DEA is not solving anything. I want to read a quote here. The war on drugs has nothing at all to do with drugs. It is part of an all-out war on the American people by a government interested only in control. The corporate grip on opinion in the United States is one of the wonders of the Western world. No first world country has ever managed to eliminate so entirely from its media all objectivity, much less dissent. And that's from Gore Vidal. This is from a friend of mine on New York Times, and I think it's a telling point. It's from CO, and he says, neocons have hairy knuckles that drag on the ground. Liberals attend autograph parties for Tinkerbell. Now, that's a bit facetious, but I think it tells a lot about the two sides. This is a poem I've written. I'm going to abuse you with it. It's called Prohibition Reversed. Civilization blossoms. Worldwide jubilation. Governments embrace the truth. Media heeds call for human rights. The end of war. A beautiful day. Gathered at the commons, we will decide. Reform sought on every continent. Truth becomes public consciousness. Activists live and die to advance truth. Prohibition creates more harm than drugs. All right, with that, let's go ahead and bring in our guest for the evening, Mr. David Borden, the executive director of DRCnet. Hello, David.
Hello, Dean.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
Not too bad.
Yes, sir. I understand you're still down here in Texas, are you?
I am. I'm over in Austin now.
Well, we got a chance to meet yesterday and the day before, and a couple of points that it was a loud dinner environment. I didn't get to hear your answer. I wanted to ask you, what brought you into the reform movement?
Well, it's a very straightforward story in a lot of ways. I decided I wanted to save the world, like a lot of people decide. I just began to really read up on the different issues and policies. This one just jumped out at me. Maybe the angle on it, that the aspect that really gripped me the most at first was the that of urban violence and the contribution that the illegal drug trade makes to it. And most people just have never thought about, well, if the drugs were legal, then this the drug trade would not be a violent industry, but would be like any other. You'd still have the dangers of drugs, but it wouldn't be something ghettoizing our inner cities. You know, this problem of urban poverty and violence has seemed intractable for so long. I've always cared about it, and I realized, well, here's an answer that most people don't want to talk about, or the politicians don't want to talk about, but it's right in front of us. I started an email list back in late 1993, and we're still building that list, and it became the organization that you know today.
Yes, and I want to point out to folks that it is a wonderful bonanza. It's chock full of information about this drug war. Your website, drcnet.org, or is it better to go now to drugwarfacts.org?
Drug War Facts is another group that's also a great site, and we link to it prominently, but we're at stopthedrugwar.org.
I'm sorry, David, I was confused there. Stopthedrugwar.org.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Drug Fact is by common sense for drug policy.
Right. I got it botched up there a bit. Okay, now, I'm looking at some of the stories that were on the main page today, and the first one is talking about there was an interview done between Mark Emery, one of my past guests, and a head of the New Democratic Party up there, Jack Layton, talking about the fact that he's not going to decriminalize marijuana, he's going to legalize it. Could you tell us a little bit about that story?
Let's see, I don't know the details on that story, but, you know, in Canada, now is Jack Layton a politician from British Columbia or nationally?
Gosh, I don't know. It's just saying head of Canada's New Democratic Party.
I can certainly talk about Canada, where the debate there is, it's at a completely different level. Last year, a panel of the Senate examined the marijuana policy, recommended that marijuana be legalized, outright, not just decriminalized. Senator Claude Nolan was the head of that. And they did not expect that the government and the parliament would adopt that as their policy, but they decided to speak the truth as they saw it. So I would say there'll certainly be a lot of pressure to not legalize, but they're well on the road to at least decriminalization, and I believe ultimately to legalization. They're certainly well ahead of us in discussing that.
Now, David, have you been seeing, there was one, I think, in South Carolina where a lady was convicted of manslaughter or second-degree murder because her stillborn, baby, they said that...
Well, the South Carolina case, a woman, a poor black woman, was convicted on that basis. Medically, there was no evidence that the cocaine use was the cause. And this is a tough issue. Even in our own movement, I've had conversations with people who agree with us on the policies that it shouldn't be criminalized and it should be a public health model, but just won't agree that the science is not there to back up very highly serious harms from cocaine being suffered by the newborn, which I'm not saying it's a good idea for anyone to use cocaine for that matter, but it clearly was not the cause. It's likely just the state of poverty, which correlates in turn with higher levels of addictive drug use. That was probably the greatest danger to the unborn child. The major medical associations have come out against these kinds of prosecutions. Now, in Hawaii, it's a methamphetamine case, and same deal, and I'm less familiar with medically the effects of meth on fetuses, but we know alcohol and cigarettes are the worst, and we're not going after those mothers for harm to the unborn children, even though in those cases, the evidence, the medical evidence is there.
Certainly with the alcohol fetal syndrome, you're right on it there, Dave.
Yeah. But, you know, even if it turns out it's the worst, using one of these drugs is the worst thing you can do for your yet-to-be-born child, and again, I certainly don't think it's a good idea to use the drugs while pregnant.
Well, I... Well,
if at all, it's just we're driving people away from the public health system who need prenatal care. The right prenatal care might have saved one of these children, but we're scaring the woman away.
No, that's absolutely right, David. I read a comment the other day that basically they didn't start out as pregnant women who became addicts, but rather were addicts who became pregnant, and they didn't.
Yeah.
David, I want to ask you here now. You were following the situation at Johns Hopkins, the studies done on ecstasy, and then the double instance where they had made incorrect assumptions based on, just faulty data. And yet that data was used to by Congress to make the RAVE Act possible. And how many instances have, I mean, there was the instance where marijuana made men grow breasts, and marijuana led to insanity, criminality, and death. How many times have they presented these facts and retracted them? Meantime, another set of, quote, facts takes its place to promulgate this drug war.
Well, this is an unusual episode in that the false claims were actually retracted. It's gone on for decades with marijuana, and what usually happens is there's some kind of very tentative preliminary finding. The studies are designed to produce them because that's what gets funded. The scientists, for the most part, and this latest, this Johns Hopkins episode is a notable exception. For the most part, the scientists do a careful job and are very cautious and understated in their statements. But then the PR department at the, at the agency, at the DEA, at the National Institute on Drug Abuse, wildly inflate the certainty or the seriousness of the scientists' findings. Again, not all of the scientists are guiltless, as we saw at Johns Hopkins, but it's really the problem is this politicization of drug abuse research, which warps the way the research is done, and the misuse by on the PR part of things by the agency. What happened at Johns Hopkins is over the top, even for this already over the top area.
Well, sure, David. I want to get your opinion on the situation with Rush Limbaugh here in just a minute. But before we do that, here's a bit that was recorded at San Francisco University by Michael Moore. We're going to play that, and we'll come back and get your thoughts in that regard.
It's the kids from the working class and the poor that have to die so that they can make more money. This is so disgusting, folks. First of all, to lead the country into war based on a lie, and then to continue that war just so that these companies can become more wealthy. Give them a taste of their own medicine, right? Speaking of medicine, anybody got any OxyContin here? You know, one illegally obtained OxyContin pill is a felony. Thousands of illegally obtained OxyContin pills are thousands of felony. But tonight, our friend Rush Limbaugh, who was forced to check himself into rehab just 3 days after my book came out. Not that I'm saying there's any connection. Now, I know we shouldn't be laughing at this because, look, anybody who's got a drug addiction or a medical problem, we should hold our arm out, our hand out to them. We should be supportive. We shouldn't be like them. That's the way they are, very mean-spirited toward people. And our side isn't that way. You know, we want people to get help when they have a problem, and we should reach down and find that place in us. I've reached down, folks, and I can't find one iota of sympathy for this guy. I'm sorry. I'm embarrassed to admit it. I wish I could. This does not make me look good because I like to think, you know, there's a good, you know, like, you know, generous Christian type spirit inside of me. But this man has led the Republican right wing revolution for over 15 years. And what has been one of the main tenets of the Limbaugh revolution? Lock them up. Lock them all up. Lock up the drug users and the drug abusers. Let's change the laws. Let's have three strikes and you're out. Right? And he's led this revolution. He's led this, and laws have been passed as a result of what he has advocated for every day on the radio for 15 years. And tonight, we have over 2 million of our fellow Americans sitting in prison. Nearly half of them, a million of them, there for drug-related offenses. And yet tonight, Rush Limbaugh is at some country club rehab place. I'm sorry, folks. This is like millions of people's lives have been destroyed as a result of these policies. If you have a drug addiction, you have a medical problem, you don't need incarceration, you need help. And we've incarcerated all these people. And Tommy Chong is in prison tonight? 9 month prison term for because he was selling a bong on the internet? Not drugs, just the bong, right? I mean, I'm sorry. I want the million who are in prison because of drugs let out, and I want Rush Limbaugh locked up and the key thrown away. You know the equation, ignorance leads to fear. If you have an ignorant public, you have a fearful public, and fear leads to hate, and hate leads to violence. That's how the equation works. This is so obscene, folks. This is so immoral. This is so disgusting. I can't tell you. If somebody just said impeach Bush, no, you know, no, that's not good enough. No, no. I want to see a perp walk coming out of the West Wing with all of them in handcuffs. These are criminals. These are criminal acts. Criminal acts.
All right, David, now you really got to like his enthusiasm, if nothing else. So what is your take on that situation with Rush Limbaugh?
Well, I think, you know, Michael Moore has certainly summed up the hypocrisy of it very well. And look at Governor Jeb Bush's daughter and the president's daughters with underage drinking, and various politicians. Every now and then we hear a child or relative who with a drug problem or involved in drug sales and gets off easy, as it seems. And so absolutely right about the hypocrisy. Even so, I don't want Rush Limbaugh locked up. I suspect Moore doesn't really either, and he was making a point. But we need to let out the 500,000 nonviolent drug offenders. And what's happened to Rush Limbaugh is an opportunity, and he's not just a politician's offspring who can keep a low profile. He's going to return to his radio show. His listeners know what happened, and so you know, if he's going to do the right thing for a change, and try and do something positive with this issue, I don't know, but maybe he'll have to.
Sure.
I think we should do our best to take the opportunity.
I think my personal quick snapshot is that Rush Limbaugh demonstrates that drugs are not detrimental in every aspect, as the drug warriors say. That Rush last year signed a $285 million contract And he'd been a junkie for 4 years at that point in time. So you can do things while using these drugs, and there's no need to send people to prison for 10 or 20 years for using these OxyContin or marijuana or any other pill.
And $285 million is a lot of money.
You betcha. You betcha. That shows a lot of success, if you ask me, for a junkie. I want to ask you, what is the future of reform? Where are we headed, and how are we going to round the corner and bring more people to see the light of day in this regard?
Well, the reform movement, I'm both sorry and not sorry to say that we don't have a cohesive strategy that all the groups are behind. We have different ideas on how to go about things. We have different issues we focus on. Medical marijuana is a primary focus for many groups. At DRCNet, we do a lot to support it, but it's not a primary mission of our organization, and not because we don't think it's important, but we're in a place to, we're in a place to be able to help with it, but not to lead it, basically. At DRCNet, one of the things where we do play more of a leadership role is advocating full legalization, and with a focus on that, our international conference series, Out from the Shadows, and then Drug Prohibition in the 21st Century, different from other conferences in that where legalization itself is the topic, and we're building I call it an edifice of opinion leaders, including politicians, willing to speak up on that level of the issue. Other organizations, Drug Policy Alliance, taking a harm reduction, decriminalization, incremental approach, and painting a picture of questioning of the drug war and the search for new solutions to it. Marijuana reform groups focusing on those issues. So we're a hodgepodge of a range of different approaches. But I'm not sorry to say that, because I see that as a strength. I think work needs to be done in all these different areas, and with all these different approaches, what they're more enthusiastic about. And for some people, that's about the right to use marijuana in the privacy of their homes or in a coffee shop or in the woods, whatever their scenario is. For others, it's needle exchange and helping reduce the harm to themselves and to their families. For others, it's, let's talk about legalization of all drugs. I guess I'm probably one of those. For others, it's the sentencing and getting people out of prison. I can't say that any one of these things is more important than the others or more effective. During the 80s and early 90s, the movement was in its infancy. During much of the 90s and the early 00s, we've been in the adolescence where...
David, can I interrupt you? I hear the John Walters and a couple of the others, they say that, these marijuana initiatives and so forth are funded by well-financed drug reform organizations. Isn't that a crock?
Well, we're not as well-funded as they are.
No, I understand they can spend more on a 30-second Super Bowl ad than we have for all of drug reform here in America for a year.
Yes, our side is not well-funded. Some of the initiative campaigns have been reasonably well-funded for such things, but, that does not make the overall well-funded issue.
No, this is true. David, we got just a minute or two left. You wanted to kind of sum it up for us? Where are you taking DRCNet? What's the next step for you guys?
Well, we're trying to build our list, as always, expand our educational services. We're working on the financial aid issue, repealing the law that takes financial aid away from students with drug convictions, the scholarship fund for such students, putting together a national campaign around that, and we're looking to raise money for this legalization conference series, take it around the world, eventually back to America, where we hope to get some members of Congress speaking out for legalization. And if everyone listening goes to stopthedrugwar.org and subscribes to the list, then they'll be sure to and continue to listen to your show, then they'll definitely hear all about it.
Well, David, I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you'll join us again here in the future. And the good thing is we'll get to see each other here in a couple of weeks at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference up in New Jersey, right?
Right. About a short drive from my hometown. And definitely you'll be looking to forward to seeing you again and maybe some of the other listeners as well.
Well, very good, sir. Enjoy your time in Texas, and thank you for being on Cultural Baggage.
All right, thanks for having me.
Okay. It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Yellow eyes, vomiting. Black, tarry stools. Cloudy urine, fever with chills. Sores, ulcers, or white spots on lips and mouth. Unusual bleeding. Time's up. The answer, another FDA-approved product, acetaminophen. Okay, this week, for our drug war hero, we're going to name Senator Kennedy and Senator Kerry for standing so tall to the DEA and demanding that the DEA allow another grower to grow a quality marijuana that can be used for these studies so that they can obtain valid results. And for that, we do name these two senators heroes of the week. I want to ask you something. Have you written your congressman yet? You know it's time. You know you can write the paper and tell them that you want this drug war to be over. I want to read you a little something I've written here. Despite the fact the drug war has been a complete failure, never achieving any of its desired results, it continues to escalate into ever more bizarre machinations. Every anti-drug government, every administrator, and every henchman of anti-drug policy are servants and conspirators of the drug lords. There can be no other explanation for a policy that has spent well in excess of $1 trillion in an effort to control the desires of humanity. No aspect of the U.S.-led efforts to prohibit drugs is based on fact, science, or compassion. The Latin American drug cartels have stretched their tentacles much deeper into our lives than most people realize. It is possible they're calling the shots at all levels of government. And that's from William Colby, former CIA director. And I say the drug lords run both sides of the equation. We've been duped. And as always, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. So please be careful. And I want to say one more thing. You are responsible for this drug war. You are responsible for its continuation, and you will be responsible for the day it ends. And I'd ask you to stand up and demand that it stop. Those politicians are waiting to hear from you. They know the truth. They're only waiting for you to validate it, to contact them, and to make sure that it's legitimate that you'll vote for them. Peace.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.